Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
Today we're going to be playing The Crew, The Quest for Planet Nine. Published in 2019, designed by Thomas Singh. The artist is Marco Armbruster, and it is published by Cosmos Games. The description is astronauts wanted. Scientists say there is a mysterious ninth planet located at the edge of the solar system, but despite all their efforts, so far they have been unable to provide substantial evidence of its existence. Join this exciting space adventure to find out if the theories are just science fiction or if you'll discover Planet Nine. In this cooperative trick-taking game, you need to complete 50 different missions, but you will only succeed if you can work together as a team. To master the challenges and achieve your mission, communication will be essential, but in space, things can be more difficult than you expect. The mechanics are communication limits, cooperative game, scenario mission campaign game, and trick-taking.
Based on the description, I thought of two things. One, scientists need to agree right now. Is Pluto a planet or is it?
That's what I was thinking too. I was like, ooh, are we trying to look for Pluto?
I think technically they now say it's a dwarf planet, which is different than a planet, but it still has planet in the name. So technically Pluto is still a planet.
Star.
No, Pluto's not a star. But in space, things can be more difficult than you expect. No, I expect space to be incredibly difficult.
But we're not in space. We're just looking at it.
Maybe.
Wait, no, why do you need the cover?
We're definitely in space.
Yeah, it says astronauts. Why can't we just look?
No, I think the scientists have tried to look, and they have decided the only way we can figure out if the moon is made of cheese or not is to send people to the moon. And then the photo reminds me of like a 60s or 70s like science fiction book cover or movie poster. Two astronauts floating out in space. Thankfully tethered to something. Can't see it. It's off. And they're looking at a planet with an asteroid belt around it. Maybe Earth. Maybe Planet Nine.
Well, I assume that's not Earth on account that it doesn't look like Earth.
Yeah.
We don't even know. Is it supposed to be this solar system? It just says
it's our solar system. It would be the ninth planet in our, because
the jury's still.
Well, we have eight planets and a dwarf planet. No,
the jury is conclusive. We have two dwarf planets, I think.
What, Mercury is the other one?
I think one of the asteroids is upgraded to a dwarf planet.
Oh.
And they just needed to differentiate because we had the word planet, but planet wasn't very descriptive. So then they just gave it tiers, essentially. So Pluto is still a planet. It's just a lower class than the other planets because it's smaller. Because, I mean, there's moons of other planets that are bigger than Pluto. So why wouldn't they be?
Yeah, because Jupiter has a ton of moons,
right?
They
just had to expand our lexicon because, we've discovered more stuff. We needed more language.
Aren't we all just moons of the sun?
Okay, so question.
Yeah, based on all this, would you pull this? It off the shelf? Jesus, good God.
I've heard a lot about it because it was the 2020 Kinder Spiel to CRS winner. And it sounds interesting, and I feel like cooperative game, that's kind of something that we really enjoy. And communication limits, we've enjoyed that in several other games. I would pick it up off the shelf. I don't know about the description and the box art because it seems somewhat generic.
I like the idea of the mechanics. I know, sounds crazy. But communication limits reminds me of Magic Maze, how it's got that. Obviously, cooperative game, the scenario, mission, campaign, that kind of thing. Space stuff, as we all know, not my forte. So, I mean, just looking at it, if I didn't know the description or the mechanics, I'd be, even by the description, I mean, kind of intrigued by the whole, is Pluto this or that? But the mechanics definitely, I feel like, would get me over the idea of sci-fi.
The communications and cooperative sounds good, but trick taking makes me think it's just going to be a card game and it will have no theme and be boring. So trick taking doesn't really excite me at all.
I guess I don't know what that is.
Yeah, we played
trick taking. So think hearts or spades. Eric and I played the Fox of the Forest. Yep. So you're saying no, you would not pick it up.
Yeah, just because that one, I mean, the art was pretty in that one and stuff, but there's not really much of a theme and it's just really just a 52 deck card game or whatever we call those things. Yeah, standard card deck game. So I feel like this is probably going to be similar. The theme will just be on top. And then like BP said, like this theme is we're already struggling with the science of it. So I don't know why we got to go out there. I don't know why we can't just look at a telescope and see the planet, but I guess we got to go poke it with a stick to make sure it's real. Yeah, I'm not really sold that there's going to be a solid theme. However, Cosmos is known for their story game, so maybe we'll see.
How do you think it's played?
So trick taking. So we're going to have cards. We're going to be playing cards, and I forget exactly how they work, but you're going to try to win a set of cards. I don't know how you do that cooperatively. I guess we'll all try to work together and play certain cards, and if we hit a combo, we get the trick. But we're not going to be able to talk about it. So we're all just going to have to play a card. It's like if we play like a, maybe you got to be like in order 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. So, I mean, well, so that kind of reminds me that it's cooperative. You can only succeed if you work together as a team. And that kind of communication limits, it reminds me a little bit of like Gloomhaven, right? I don't know about the trick taking, but definitely right. Because Gloomhaven, your communication is limited, right? Until you've revealed.
I think it'll be similar to Magic Maze, where it'll just be like, okay, everyone go silent on this mission. And then you've got to put together some sort of combo of cards. And if you successfully do that, but if you don't, if you're not on the same page and everybody plays the same thing, then you don't get the, I don't know, something like that.
Okay.
And then we're going to poke a planet with a stick to see if it's there.
So the history of Pluto.
So if I had known we were in search of Pluto, I would have done that. But I was just thinking based on the title that you'd given me, I just went science fiction, which the description still makes you think about it because, yeah. Right, the description still also says, is this theory just science fiction? And then the whole idea of planets and discovering planets also fits in because, like, when I went to the history of science fiction, one of the things that stood out to me, I mean, I was just thinking and I was like, oh my God, it's going to be, of course, tied to the space race. And I'm so tired of talking about the space race in a history section because I feel like every space,
every game is space.
We always do. But actually, science fiction is much older. I mean, and then it made sense. It was like one of those, you know, light bulb moments almost for myself where I was like, of course, because humans have always been fascinated with the stars, right? And the explanation of how, you know, the world works. So, right, I mean, attribute them to gods or whatnot. I mean, the development of mathematics was by and large, right, developed to be able to trace stars and create calendars and things like that. So this brings me to one of the kind of starring moments of sci-fi, because, I mean, there's Latin authors who people consider, right, to be some of the earliest sci-fi authors. But when you start to see the 17th century and thinking about the discovery of planets and the discovery of stars and the naming of things, right, during the Scientific Revolution, you also see a plethora of books coming out. For instance, Jonathan Swift's Gulliver Travels, right, comes out shortly around that same period in time. Kepler, Francis Bacon, like all of these big science, right, revolutionary thinkers are also writing all of these kind of fictions and, you know, what knowledge they have of space, they're also trying to expand upon it and think through possibilities, which is kind of what science fiction does. It allows us to be able to explore space, whether, you know, based on what we know, Pluto, whatever its category is now or was, and also allows us to think about the limitations of humanity, the exploitations of humanity, et cetera. So it really is kind of fascinating when you put science fiction in kind of this longer picture, if you will, of the history of humans. So
it made me think of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and all those other Jules Verne stories. Mm-hmm. So I just looked it up. He died 25 years before we even discovered Pluto.
Huh.
So you guys were actually really, really close.
Sweet.
And by you guys, I mean mostly Eric, because I think he got most of it. BP just agreed. But I think you guys were pretty close. So the game is played in a series of rounds, and those are called missions. And the game continues until the players complete all 50 missions. Reattempts at missions or use of in-game aids is denoted in the logbook. The goal is to try and complete the 50 missions in the fewest number of attempts. You can skip a mission if you want to by just putting in 10 for the number of attempts. And if you're playing in a 5-player crew, you actually start at mission 25. The rulebook does say that, hey, 50 missions is a lot and you might not be able to fit it in one sitting, and it's okay to play it over several sittings. So I suppose we'll just see how far we get today. So players will be dealt at the beginning of every mission. Players are going to be dealt an equal number of cards from the deck, with one player getting a single extra card if you're playing with an odd number of players. So one of us will have an extra card. And the player who is dealt the 4 of rockets at the beginning of the mission is the start player, and from henceforth will be known as the commander. Each mission will have different requirements for completion, and they're listed in the logbook. Some of them will have tasks. Sometimes those tasks will have to be done in certain orders. And the tasks themselves are going to be a color and a number. So that's going to go with the suit and the value of the card. So like if you have the purple 9 task, you have to win the purple 9 in one of the tricks. Starting with the commander, players will then take turns playing cards to the middle of the table. And the first player who plays sets the suit for that trick. If it's your turn and you have a matching suit card, you have to play that card. If you have multiple of that suit, you can choose which card that you play. The rockets is the trump suit. So if you don't have the suit that's been played, you can play a rocket. It will trump any other suit, and then whoever plays the highest rocket will win the trick. If the mission uses task cards, and so that's what I talked about with like the purple 9, and another player wins a card that completes your task, the mission's lost immediately and you have to start over. You cannot talk about the cards in your hand. You cannot show, say, or suggest to other players what cards you have. Generally speaking, if you know something only because you can see it in your hand, you can't talk about it. You are allowed one communication per mission, but that communication is going to come in the form of a token. And so how it works is after tasks are distributed or before a trick is started, you can play a card down from your hand and then you can play your communication token on it. And the way it works is if you play it at the top of the card, it means it's the highest value card you have of that suit. If you play it at the bottom, it's the lowest value card you have of that suit. And if you play it in the middle, it's the only card you have of that suit. And that's the only way that you can communicate. And you can do that once per mission.
Wait, each player can do it once per mission?
Each player can do it once per mission. For any reason, if whatever you indicated changes, you can't move the token. So like if it goes from being the highest to being your only, you can't move it. Mm. And you can't use rocket cards to communicate.
I often use rockets to communicate. I find they're very clear.
Yeah. Well, basically what people are doing, setting off fireworks right now. So finally, the first trick, the players can decide to, before the first trick, we can also send up a distress token, which adds an attempt to our log for that particular mission. But at the beginning of the mission, everybody gets to pass a card. So we all decide as a crew whether we want to pass left or right. And you get to pass one card. The important part is once we decide to do it on one mission, we do it on all subsequent attempts for that mission. And we always have to do it. And those are the rules to the crew search for Planet 9.
Let's explore.
Let's blast off.
Blast off.
Blast off. We just finished a game of The Crew, The Quest for Planet 9. To recap, we did 10 missions, which we completed with a total of 21 attempts and one distress signal.
Yeah, so 20 games, 20 hands is essentially what we played.
I mean, we got through 10 of them, 50% success rate. So what was our winning strategy?
I feel like once we sort of came up with...
I feel like each mission was different.
Yeah, I thought, I don't know if we necessarily had a strategy in general. I feel like we kind of figured it out as we progressed further. Like Eric pointed out that one bit at the beginning, like, hey, if you have a low card and it's one of the tasks, like maybe don't take it.
Right.
But if you have a high card, it makes sense to take it.
But that was like our last hand.
Yeah, so when we figured that out. It took us 20 hands to kind of figure it out.
Yeah. But I mean, we figured out a little bit with like dumping cards and stuff.
Yeah. And I think we learned to communicate more smartly.
Yeah. Using the communication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that like we would hold off.
Or we would make sure that when we communicated, it was something that like it was concrete communication within the rules of these are the three things I'm allowed to communicate.
And then
managing your hand.
And so there is a certain math aspect to it. I mean, you do want to be able to track cards. And I figured that out. Yeah, I figured that out pretty early on about tracking cards. And I actually did it for once in my life. So,
all right. What'd you think of the theme?
Did you feel like you were in space trying to find Planet Nine?
I feel like it could
did
have been.
Did you find Pluto?
No, we didn't. We didn't even make it to the end. I feel like there are probably a lot of things that you could like make it. I feel like the theme is coming out in story. Mm. So like, you know, when we were reading off the story from the logbook, that's where the theme came in. But I think you could have made the theme anything.
No,
it could have
been random
journey
story.
To the center of the earth. Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like you could have made the story any kind of
mission oriented task.
You could have fit the mechanics within it.
There was a card game and then the book had a story that was unrelated to the card game.
Right.
Like when you were, he didn't read the story for like the first six missions or whatever.
Almost 10 missions. Yeah.
And then he went back and read them all. And I could not tell you which story went with which mission.
Right.
They were unrelated.
Even though he told us. Yes. Yeah. No. Yeah. I'm with Eric on this one. I think it was a card game with a space box. And when you read the story, that was supposed to somehow connect, which it didn't connect.
And then on top of that, like of all the themes, if you're just going to tack on a theme on top of it, like space astronauts, this is kind of not an exciting one.
It's
kind of an easy way to do it.
It was like they made the game and they said, hey, we need a theme. And they said, zombies? And somebody's like, nah, we did zombies last time. Space? Yeah, sure. Yeah. What about the art, BP? The art really tie it together and bring out the theme?
Right? There were rockets on some of the cards. Yeah.
The other cards were very brightly colored.
Yeah. No, there was no theme. There was no art to the theme. I mean, yes, they had space type pictures on them, but I didn't pay attention to them. I was more like, is that a six or is that a nine? It was more important.
I will say the iconography was very clear on what color the card was and what number the card was.
Yeah, it kind of seems like they did try to make an effort to make sure that it, because you know, this is sort of a color focused game because the cards are very specific, but they gave each one different symbols. And in the rule book, they do point out, hey, if you have difficulty
with the colors.
Distinguishing colors, these are the symbols that go with them. So there's a level of accessibility that in this game that they specifically pointed out that we might not have seen in other games. So that's nice.
True. That is a good point. That is a good point.
And the icons were also very clear. We went off color because we all see color. But the icons were also very clear if that's what you need to go on. So from a design's perspective, they're very clear on what you needed to know to play the game. From an art perspective.
Yep. Yeah, there's not much.
Yeah.
The game also goes so quick. I think the game goes so quick, too, that you really don't want to bother putting a whole lot of effort into art because that's not the... You're not going to spend a lot of time looking at the cards.
Yeah. But then again, it just goes to then how Eric introduced the art section anyway. It could be then any theme. Yep. You could have any symbols you could have, right? Like whatever color X and X is your symbol. Boom.
Yes.
Mechanics, Kiwi?
So, I mean, from a trick taking aspect, you know, usually what you see is like games like Hearts where you have two teams and you're trying to get tricks or Spades. If anybody has played Spades as well. No? Okay. Wow. Anyway, usually with a trick taking game, that's why the Fox in the Forest is so interesting because it's a two player trick taking game, which you typically don't see. Most of them are built for three to four players, and usually the four player ones are teams where there is limited communication. So like in Spades, depending on what school you went to, everybody played it differently. But like your teammate, you would have to look at your hand and you would have to without communicated to each other how many books or tricks you think that your team can take. Because that's how you got points, was if you went above that, you got a certain amount of points. If you hit it exactly, you got the most points. And if you didn't hit it at all, you lost points as well. So that was kind of the idea behind it. So going in and making this trick-taking game a cooperative game, I feel like you have to make it limited communication. Because if you're allowed to talk, this game is too easy. Mm. Same thing with Magic Maze. Mm-hmm. If you were allowed to talk to Magic Maze, you could be like, Kiwi, do this. BP, do this. Eric, do this. And you're done. The difficulty comes in the not being able to communicate. So I thought that did make for an interesting game, you know, taking a mechanic that is, you know, very old, going back to Hearts and Bridge and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, changing it a little bit to make it interesting. But then the logbook, the missions, making each mission different. And even when you have to retry a mission, you don't retry it and get the same exact tasks. Mm-hmm. It's different tasks that can happen. So like, you know, we did one where it was like 987 of pink. And it's like, well, this is going to be impossible. It did take a mechanic that's old and been used a lot and changed it a little bit to make it for an interesting game.
I mean, I appreciate cooperative games, obviously. I like communication limits. Obviously, I also struggle with communication limits because I just make a lot of noises. I mean, so in that aspect, like, again, I'm very attracted by these themes or these mechanics. I just, again, I don't know how much, like, it really worked into the theme of it all. And I mean, maybe I would like a game like Bridge or Hearts, but it also seems, again, kind of basic-esque. And I don't know.
Yeah, pretty much with BP, like, I like the cooperative nature of it compared to, like, Fox in the Forest, which is the only other trick-taking game I played. So I like that aspect of it. And like you said, the communication limits make sense because of it'd be too easy if you didn't have them. So, I mean, it worked together, I think. I felt like it's reminded me of when we played Paperback. You know, with that, we had little to no word game experience, and it felt like we jumped into, like, an expert level word game. And then, like, this one, it kind of felt the same, like we had little to no trick-taking game experience and we jumped into like an expert level trick-taking game. So it felt like the learning curve was really steep to like, I feel like the first like five missions were probably something like people who played a lot of Hearts and Bridge apparently would have picked up quickly. That took us a little longer, but I do like how the missions are kind of laid out to get progressively harder. So you kind of can learn as you go, but it did feel like there was a sharp learning curve with figuring it all out. I kind of talked about rules, so BP, anything on learning the game and whatever?
I started counting cards and tracking cards.
And that's why we kicked her out of the house. I won't stand for cheaters.
I feel like that was helpful. This was a cooperative game. No, it was. It was like, okay, we've played all of the top six of this particular color. Yeah. Other than that, I mean, I would agree with what Eric just said, is that, again, maybe if you're used to those types of games, you would have been like, yeah, duh, lady, you start counting cards. Like, that's how you play these games. But, you know, it just wasn't. Or, like, when you choose your tasks, I don't know. Like, yeah.
This was like when we played Fox in the Forest and Kiwi went through the whole rules and he said, trick. Taking like 5,000 times. And then we started playing and I said, so what's a trick? He's like,
Yeah. So when I was figuring out, like, you know, when I make the rule summary to talk about, I try to figure out like, how do I want to do this teach? Mm-hmm. And so I forgot that Eric had never played a trick taking game. Had I gone back and listened to the Fox before, I would have remembered, but I kind of based some of my, how I was going to teach the game on assuming that people had experience with other trick-taking games.
And then you had us too.
Yeah. That's okay, but I think that's important to think about when you have to go into a teach is maybe, you know, don't necessarily use it. I think Jeff Engelstein talks about it because he teaches at NYU, I think it is. He teaches like game design and stuff.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And one of the things that he does is the homework, it's either the homework he assigns or the games that they play in class. He will specifically pick out games that here are the mechanics or the things that I want to teach in order to do this. in order to teach this kind of mechanic so that in later on in the semester, I can say, hey, remember when we played Catan and it had these elements to it? When the war game simulation that they were going to use at school last year, mm-hmm. that was one of the ways that those guys taught was because they had to take people, they had to assume mm-hmm. that people had zero board game experience. Mm-hmm. And yep. so the first couple classes, we didn't even pick up the rules for the actual simulation that we were going to use. They were like, okay, we're playing Kriegsspiel, then we're playing Race to the Rhine, then we're playing this, this, and this, because they were trying to, so that when they got to the rules, they can say, hey, remember in Kriegsspiel, this aspect to it,
so
this
portion of the game. Hands-on instruction before the read, write instruction.
Like it's yeah. just getting that little experience with like the core mechanics, and then you can play the more advanced games.
I mean, maybe not with you guys, because now I have a better idea of what you have played. But like if we had this game and I had to teach people that I didn't know what their gaming experience mm-hmm. was, I would make adjustments to how I teach it in order to make sure that everybody's kind of on the same playing field almost. Maybe going more into like, this is a trick and this is what happens when you yeah. play a trick, which I kind of skimmed over with the assumption of folks had trick-taking game experience. So that's, I think that's important to note and talk about. The rule book, it does have good examples, but it jumps around a lot. So it does that thing that I hate. Kind of like setup is in, like you're a couple pages in before you even get to mission setup. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really go in chronological order of how you would expect the game to go, which is how I prefer my rule books to go. So you kind of have to jump around a bunch in order to get there. The nice part is they do put on the margin, not the margin. Yeah. The margins, the edge of the pages, they do have like
summaries
yeah. so that if you haven't played for a while, you can just read the summaries in the margin and it gives you a pretty That's good, nice. It re-ups you into the game. And then in the table of contents, it also says like, hey, if you want to jump right into the game, read up to page 11. Once you start doing missions, read up to these.
There's 11 pages of rules in that.
The rule book itself, including 22. The cover page and the end, is 22 pages.
Seems like a lot. All right. Player interaction? It's a
There's
lot.
There's a bunch.
Like you're trying to figure out what everybody's doing. It's the kind I like, too, where you're sort of like the deductive one of trying to figure out what people are thinking and what they need to do and stuff. So, and of course, that's added, too, with the communication limits and stuff. So,
yeah, I mean, and being cooperative, so you're trying to work with them as opposed to against them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, BP was counting cards. She said so.
Yeah,
yeah.
Apparently, communicating that, which I probably wasn't supposed to.
No, I think that is okay. Like you saying, like, "Hey, these cards have been played," because the way the rule book spells it out is if it's information that you only know because of what you see have in your hand.
That's right.
But you saying, like, "Hey, the 9, 8, and 7 have all been played," that is allowable communication.
All right. Would you play it again, Kiwi?
Yeah, I think I would play it again. I liked the puzzle aspect and the co-opness. I think it's a little more chill almost than Magic Maze because Magic Maze adds in the time pressure as well. So you don't really get the chance to kind of think about it. But the lack of communication and everybody trying to work together in a puzzle that would be infinitely easier if you could communicate. It was fun and enjoyable. And I could see, I think the replayability is pretty high because the number of the tasks are going to change every mm-hmm. mission. The missions are all slightly different. You don't have to start at one. You could start at a later mission if you wanted to, just to like increase the difficulty. So I think the replayability is pretty high. And I feel like I understand why it won the Kenner Spiel. I think it's worthy of that award, I think.
It's your opinion. It doesn't matter. Yeah, the awarding of such.
But we've played Spiel winners before where we were just like, I don't know why this won.
They've been very big on these like communication limit kind of games because didn't The Mind win or it was a nominated
yeah,
or something?
The Mind, I think, it was either Spiel or Kenner Spiel. Yeah. The Magic Maze, I think, was a nominee.
Right. So they've been big fans of these for a while. BP, would you play it again?
I would. I did enjoy it. Although, as we were playing through, I kept wondering, like, I think I said a couple of things. One, the replayability, because it kind of has that legacy type aspect where, again, like, I mean, you can come back to it. I guess it doesn't build on it, but like, you know, with Pandemic and the, especially the Legacy series, like you, I mean, you are kind of building towards something. And I feel like even in these missions, you are kind of right building, like if you have that same team, you've learned how to communicate with each other, you've learned how to play together. It would definitely be very different if suddenly, you know, maybe Kiwi and I sat down with, like, you know, our two neighbors that we barely know or something, right? And, we started playing this and then we had to learn how to communicate with them. So, you know, it would take that ramp up time again. But I don't know, it was interesting enough.
Would I play it again? No. It was fun and everything. Like, it was okay. And then it's like puzzly and stuff. It's very like gamified. Like it encourages you to keep going or come back to. Whereas like I think a lot of games, like when you're talking about the value over time and stuff, like a lot of games, like you play a bit, but then you kind of like lose interest or it doesn't. Like this one is like, I want to do the next mission, and they're so quick that you just sort of keep playing them. It's like, I think for value, it's good value. Like it was fun to do, but just sort of like it's a card game. Like now that we have stopped playing it, wouldn't want to like be like, oh, let's go play that again. Like it's just sort of not that interesting to me. So
yeah, it's an interesting take. I hadn't thought about that.
I was also thinking of like a, you know, a gambling game like blackjack or something. Like you're on a roll. Yeah. You're on a roll. So you're doing well. And once you walk away from the table and you're like, I've got other things, right, to go do, food to eat.
Or it's like, I wouldn't be like, I'm really excited to play that again. Like, it's like, oh, that's okay. So I don't know. That's where, but I mean, that's kind of how I am with all like card games. So, but I can see like, yeah, it's creative. It was enjoyable. And I can see why it like, you know, won stuff and people who do really like card games. I think with, like I said, with Box in the Forest, like I have friends who are more card game people, and this would be a good way to get them into more board game type stuff, is like give them something they're familiar with, but with a little bit more of a board game flair to it. So that might be the only place I would like go to this game. All right. That is The Crew, The Search for Planet Nine.
AKA Pluto.
Maybe. They don't actually
specify. I think the joke is that Pluto is no longer the ninth planet, even though it is. We have 11 planets or whatever. So they're saying the search for the new Planet Nine to replace Pluto. I think that's okay. The joke of the game.
Do you have any comments about planets or trick-taking games?
Nope, just games. No planets. Don't ask us about planets.
Clearly. I don't know. Just send us comments. Comments and recommendations. That's firstturntabletop@gmail.com for email, or Twitter and Instagram. We can be found at firstturncast. And the podcasting camel with his cosmonaut helmet on says, please don't forget.
I feel like this camel wears that helmet a lot.
I know. Yeah. This camel, I tell you, if I could make t-shirts, we would have like an array of 20 t-shirts with the podcasting camel. And as he says every single week, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcatchers. We look forward to hearing from you. Play more games in space.
My very educated mother just served us nine. Nine what? Nine what? What has she served you?
Guys, I'm counting.
Are you? Okay.
Beep. Yeah.
I don't know how to make this help or hurt us, so I don't know.
So, Eric doesn't know how to communicate.
I may have communicated poorly.
Trogdor was a man. Trogdor was a dragon, like, man.
We sit in here and you turn on the microphone and like some alter ego comes out of you.